Hi, and welcome back to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is episode number 317. Today, I have with us Jeff Williams. He is now the CIO of Genfinity. Prior to that, Jeff was, as an American citizen, came to the Philippines in the early days of about 2003. That was very much the nascent days of the offshore staffing industry, and he went bold and he built a medical services offshore staffing facility, and he successfully exited out of that very successful business in about 10 years from starting it. Jeff stayed on in the Philippines. He became the chairman of HEMAP, which you're going to learn all about in this episode, and then has now gone on to found Genfinity. So Jeff is a great person to know. He has seen the outsourcing industry grow up, and he has helped in no small part in helping this industry build up and thrive. So it's great to have Jeff on the show. I certainly learnt a lot, as I always do whenever I have a chat to Jeff. If you want any of the show notes or links or notes about this discussion, as always, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. I started off my conversation with Jeff by asking him how, as an American, he found himself in the Philippines.
Prior to coming to the Philippines, I was did IT work for a large contract manufacturing firm. I was the worldwide IT director, and my job was going around setting up remote sites in Scotland, Malaysia, Puerto Rico. And so I kind of got a bit of a reputation as a guy who could go around. I would spend months on site as a facility was coming up and making sure it was all linked properly back home. This was kind of not pre-internet, but pre-active internet, I should say. So people had always brought in dedicated lines, and I had to kind of oversee bringing all that up and all the trials and tribulations. And because of that experience, I was tapped by an associate to come and investigate the Philippines. So I came out here. This was in late 2002. Kind of had a look around and saw that obviously it was a very prime market space or area to be, that we some type of work could be done. The contact centers were pretty nascent at that time. There was just a couple players. I'm in healthcare, and it picked up real quickly on the fact of how many nurses and stuff there were here. We'd really just kind of got talking back and forth amongst ourselves, being the entrepreneurial types, my business partners and I. And we said, what if we put nurses in a contact center? And that really stemmed from there. Hence, the name was MediCall.
That is actually a great name, I have to say, Jeff. There's a lot of sort of conjugations of words, but that really is a fantastic name that you settled with. And so you got to the Philippines in 2002 as a bit of a history lesson for outsourcing. Outsourcing's really only been going since mid-90s. So you got in really quite early, and you saw an opening and an opportunity. You're American, obviously. You saw an opportunity not just for call centers, but a specialized vertical, and that was within the nursing and medical environment, yeah?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, the Philippines has a very, very rich history in the nursing field, right? Beginning way back from World War II times, nurses have been been created here, and it's all under U.S. educational system as well too. And there's been a long history of nurses getting their degrees, education here, and then migrating to the U.S. under special visas, even to some degree, that were allowed them to kind of come in and bring family members with them and relocate and feed the nursing need for the U.S. for many years.
Did you just come up with this idea? Was there already nurses in call centers, even onshore in the US, and you thought you could sort of replicate this? Or were you thinking, you know, right from first principles that effectively you could do medical transcription, medical services from somewhere as remote as the Philippines?
Well, I'll be honest, there was not a medical bone in my body, nor my partner. So when we started, it wasn't like, oh, we know there's this big need for nurses in this. It was really... looking for opportunity that we saw. I'd love to say we were the first ones with the idea to have nurses in contact centers, but I'm sure there's somebody who can tell me they were doing it before us. But I think we obviously really did pave a way for it, certainly in the Philippines. The U.S. is interesting enough when you think of outsourcing. People think, oh, the medical field don't outsource. They've been outsourcing for a long time. It's outsourcing within country versus offshoring. Right. I mean, there's a lot of third party companies that support a lot of the insurance companies and hospitals today from the U.S. shores. So, you know, bringing it to an offshore environment was more of the change, but certainly they're no stranger to outsourcing itself.
And fast forward about 20 years, can you just give listeners a context of now what is healthcare outsourcing, how big it is, you know, and the kind of industry that it's matured into?
Yeah, and actually in line with our conversation, when I came here in 2003, again, it was really pretty non-existent here. What was being done, what was being called healthcare, there was, you know, we have the associations, right? You have IBPAP and you have HIMAP, which is Health Information Management Association. You got PSIA for software. HIMAP at that time was called MTAPI, and that was the Medical Transcription Association of the Philippine Islands. So really, when you talked about, you know, outsourcing anything medical, it was pretty much transcription work. And this is, you know, when you go to, and you see it all the time, doctors talk into their little tape recorders, or maybe they call in, talk to a service, and they make all their clinical notes on a patient visit. And then they would have a person here in the Philippines would be listening to that recording and then transcribe that into written word. So it was existing here then, and it wasn't until about 2010, I think it was 2011, that they changed their charter from being MTAPI to Healthcare Information Management. And that was right at the time that my company, Medi-Call, we were growing up. And again, we started out with just a simple premise of, oh, well, it just makes sense. We'll put a nurse in a contact center. They can help maybe with appointment scheduling or some back office support. And we found very quickly that they were capable of doing so much more than just those basic tasks. So then the challenge came on to us to find out, going, how can we really kind of step it up and push these people to the limits of the capabilities they're capable of? And that's, we started going down the route of claim adjudication, case management support, very high-end service offerings that were coming out of the Philippines. And that's really what's changed the game, and that's why now you're seeing the big explosion. The Affordable Care Act that kind of came into play really made a big, major push, because there's a medical loss ratio. And the way things work is they tell insurance companies that you have to spend X percent of your the premiums that you receive have to be spent on actual care, and then there's a smaller percentage allowed for their administration and profit. Before the Affordable Care Act, there was no real set guidelines, and then when it kind of came in and said, well, if you're X large, it's got to be 80%, or if you're larger, it's 85%, really kind of cut into the bucket. And that put health insurance companies in a situation, or the payers, as we call them, to say, how do I do this more, you know, affordably? And what we found is that there's USRNs here in the Philippines, again, to the model I told you, they migrate to the U.S. So we said, well, while they're here in the Philippines waiting for their, you know, visa papers, why don't we have them do that work here? And we really blazed a path with that, and went off and got the proper certifications and things that were needed to allow that to happen offshore. And we were the first company to actually not only do claim adjudication from the Philippines, but to actually really do it certified outside the U.S. Actually changed the model a little bit because of the way we now create a new sector of internationally accredited.
And so can you give some, you know, specific examples of technical tasks and roles and functions that you basically got these teams to do then?
Yeah, sure. So again, when we first started out, it was just some simple things. I mean, our very first client was glasses, or what's the right word? Sorry, glasses manufacturer,
Spectacles.
spectacles. Yes. So and they were just coming out with these new the glasses. You don't see the line for the bifocals, right? The ones that are integrated into the lens. And what we did is we had a couple of nurses, and we brought in an optometrician, and we were calling other optical departments or other doctors in the US, and explaining them to the virtues of this new product, and trying to help, kind of a B2B sale to kind of get them to understand why they should be offering this product. So that was, again, that's right on the front end, in line with what we were thinking, using clinical people to kind of support a process. When we really The biggest thing for us, the biggest change, is when we started looking at claim adjudication and or it's utilization management, or utilization review, depending if you're talking about workers' comp or in the basic healthcare fields. But it's a very similar process. And what it means is, an insurance company in the US, the insurance model works. If you go to the doctor and say, "Hey, I've got a tennis elbow," and the doctor says, "Oh, that's a really bad case of tennis elbow. We need to do surgery on it." Well, he can't get authorization to do that surgery until, the insurance company has to review all the records, all the MRIs, all the tests, everything that was done, and then say, "Yes, we agree it does require that surgery, and we'll pay for it." Or, "We reviewed it, and we don't agree that it requires surgery, so we're not going to pay for surgery." And that's what the health and what the insurance companies kind of have, checks and balances in place, just to make sure doctors aren't kind of, again, overutilizing the services and capabilities they have, and trying to bill above and beyond what is actually required. And that's where we had U.S. registered nurses residing here in the Philippines. They would get all those clinical records, and they would review it. So, looking at the X-rays, looking at the MRIs, lab reports, whatever it may be, and then compare them against state guidelines, because the U.S. being 50 different states, the guidelines are kind of a little bit different for every state. And then the same thing, the company itself may have its own kind of methodology about how it reviews and what it approves. So factoring those things all in and looking at the charts, they would say, a nurse by default in the process cannot deny a claim, but they can only approve. So if the nurse reviews it and says everything lines up, we approve, then it moves on and it's given approval by the insurance company for payment. If a nurse says, "I cannot approve it," then it has to go to another doctor, which would then, it's called a peer review. Another doctor of the same discipline would review the same case, and he would look at it and say, "Hey, I'm going to deny it unless," and then he would make a phone call to the original doctor and say, "Look, I'm reviewing this case. It's not lining up. I don't think it warrants surgery. So unless you tell me something I'm missing in the notes, this claim's going to be denied." So,
Right.
and that's basically claim adjudication, which is, again, it's very high end. I mean, you truly are investigating all the records for a clinical procedure case, and approving it or denying it, essentially, right? Or approving or not approving, I should say. We have then even took it a step further. So then that peer review process, again, is done by doctors in the U.S. Insurance companies have contracts with a lot of doctors that, a lot of times in their part time, they'll say, "Hey, I need you to do a peer review on these cases," right? Say, I got a pediatrician, and we got these 4 foot cases, and we need you to kind of do a peer review on that we want to investigate. And the doctor, in his spare time, would review the case, look at all the stuff, and do that peer review portion I told you about. Well, another thing that kind of came with the Affordable Care Act is when they put in those limitations on regarding the medical loss ratios, and they also put in and said, "We need more stringent responses, more detailed responses from the doctors on why you're approving or denying." And that meant it was more work for the doctor. So in the old model, the insurance company would pay a doctor a price per peer review that they would do, and they would only take them maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes to kind of do one. Well, now when they came in and started putting additional requirements on it, all of a sudden now it's taking an hour and a half to do one, but the insurance company doesn't want to pay more for it. So the doctors are kind of, we don't know if we want to do it. And it kind of gets challenging. So what we did in that case then is we, similar to the nursing model, we found local Philippine doctors, brought them into our organization, and had them do what we called a peer review prep. Now, that you have to be a licensed U.S. doctor to do the peer review. So what we did is we used Philippine doctors to essentially do the prep work for the peer review. They would do all the legwork, all the backup, and say, "Hey, we're denying it listed because this section, Article 2, page 3, paragraph 4, of such regulation is the reasons for denial." We would prep all that work up, then send that to the doctor, and then the doctor would do his peer review. Now, the doctor would get paid less per peer review because obviously a portion of that would come to us for our doctors doing it. But a doctor could do more within 1 hour than he could before. So at the end of the day, he could net more money in 1 hour. Because say if you were getting $100 for a case before, and now you're only getting 75, but you could only do two cases an hour, now you can do three cases per hour, you can see the doctor can net more money in the same amount of time.
Fantastic. So, you know, we went down a bit of a rabbit hole there, but I think it's incredible to illustrate to people out in the audience that, you know, this isn't just, we're not dealing with cold calling call centers here. This is what you built was a process that was highly technical. It's high specialization. It's within the medical field. It's in a highly regulated space. And you create an environment where you had U.S. qualified professionals sitting in an office in Manila doing all of these high technical, high competency tasks for the U.S.
Okay. No, 100%. And you're right, it did go down a bit of a rabbit hole. But I think it's important because for exactly the reason you just said, the message it's giving, it's anything can be done pretty much, right? If you're just going to put the diligence to it, you got the right skill sets from the people, you've got the right environment from security and operational from putting in the proper protocols and those type of things, just about anything can be done. And that's just one example. And there's plenty of other members of HIMAP. I still am, speaking of HIMAP, I am an active board member of that association, was chairman of it for 8 years. And the membership from HIMAP is, there's a lot of companies doing something like that just as well, something just as complicated. It's kind of out of the box, and because they've got the right skills and the right kind of people.
And you mentioned security. People listening right now are probably thinking, you know, is this allowed? And what hoops did you have to jump through? What kind of regulation did you have to abide by so that you could do this process securely?
Well, two different spins on that. I mean, from a, like I said, from the claim adjudication, there's an association called URAC, U-R-A-C, in the U.S. that oversees. You have to be certified by them, you know, to do the utilization review or utilization management work. And like I said, we actually blazed a path, and an international accreditation did not exist before we went to them. So that's one kind of regulation, very big hurdle that we kind of did. From a technical point of view that you're asking, it's interesting. Everyone hears HIPAA and they kind of get scared and they go, oh my God, it's so much tighter. And I don't know necessarily that it really is. I think it's just got extra attention on it. Obviously, just like if you're working with a banking here or a banking company here, you know, I'm more concerned that my banking information is going to be secured than I am if someone got a hold of my health information. I mean, I wouldn't want someone to do it, but at the real end of the day, yeah, choose. Can you see my bank account or talk to see if I had a broken legs 5 years ago? You know, I mean,
yeah. And so you mentioned HIPAA, which is the health standard for information compliance.
HIPAA was a standard. It's a health information Portability Act, meaning that they had to make data available. And again, that's the major change that's making all of this possible today. HIPAA itself is basically saying you've got, as a doctor, got to make your patient information has got to be portable, meaning you can share it with hospitals, you could share it with the patient in digital formats, right? And because it's in digital, that brings in all those regulations that we talk about to show that you got to show it's behind firewalls, it's got to be encrypted, got to be secured. When people are having conversations, someone can't just log onto your website and see all the medical history of all the other patients, that type of information. So again, those are the same basic rules we put into everything we do here, right? And for that part, most of the healthcare work that's done in the U.S., the data never really leaves the U.S. A lot of times we're just using, you know, terminal type of configurations or, you know, as everyone that you see now today, you can go online and everything is in the cloud per se. And the cloud kind of depends on where that cloud is at. Until recently, the healthcare field, those clouds were internal clouds. So if you had a large insurance company or a large hospital, they had their server rooms, and that was their cloud that you were accessing. Now we're now seeing healthcare data is finally moving into the larger ether cloud, right, where it's really kind of, you know, positioned where. And that's allowed to happen because of the security protocols that are put into place now and how you can access, you can restrict IP ranges that can access the data. Obviously, there's, you know, user validation, verification, there's end-to-end encryption while it travels, those type of things. The PCs need to be locked down so someone can't be, while they're logged on, copying the data off, doing screenshots, so maybe they're saving, you know, personal or private information, those type of things.
And so again, if you zoom out, you know, what I think you've brilliantly illustrated here is, again, a super highly regulated space. You have achieved US certification in the Philippines, and you're using US qualified people to do activities in the Philippines. So in effect, you know, you've taken on a highly complex, highly regulated task, and you've moved it offshore, which is, you know, incredible. But it goes to show that anything is really achievable globally and with the globalized workforce, and specifically in the Philippines. Yeah, it's and you know, I think we're seeing that now across every industry. And you don't need to be worried about whether your industry is highly regulated or highly complex or highly technical or needs specific qualifications, because everyone is here in the Philippines, and you can build the environment around that that creates a success for the process.
Yeah, and I think a really great thing to, or way to look at it is, you know, when the BPO industry started, and not just in the Philippines, obviously, remember, a lot of it started, originated coming out of India and other countries. It was a labor arbitrage play, right? It was really kind of, and just, you know, how manufacturing's done, right? When you see that now things are getting manufactured out of China or Vietnam or other places just because it's, you know, more cost-effective than manufacturing in the U.S. Services went down that same route, right? And that's what it was a labor arbitrage. It's basically, hey, I get these people for, you know, 50 cents on the dollar or whatever it may be to do the work. But now, since we've grown so much in the level of services that we offer, it's no longer I'm shopping around for the best rate. I mean, that's always going to be a factor, obviously, but now I'm searching for the right talent. And that's what makes the big difference. And again, what really differentiates the Philippines from all other countries, no other country has a per capita output of number of nurses as the Philippines does, right? I mean, there's just been this big engine of creating nurses for so many years that there's more nurses here than anywhere. And if you're trying to do a job, and especially say if you've got a health insurance company and you're trying doing work and you want to go cost effective, so maybe I go down to some lower income area of the U.S. and I hire someone, and then I got to take 6 weeks to 8 weeks training them on basic medical terminology just before they could start doing the job I need. And then even with that, I mean, again, how effective? I mean, certainly you could teach them a lot of the buzzwords, but how much do they really understand of it versus someone who's got a four-year degree in healthcare? So now I don't have to waste any time training you about the healthcare environment. I spend all my time training you on my process, my platform, what my ideals of my company is. So you end up with you got a deeper understanding of the arena you're working in, and you spend more time on working about what my vision for my company and how you're representing me would be.
And you're already at a competitive advantage to people in the US, because I assume they're not using registered nurses to do this work, the outsourcing companies in the US, whereas you can kind of leapfrog them in terms of technical capacity because you've got qualified nurses and qualified doctors working on these cases.
Yeah, no, exactly. There certainly are benefits to, again, it's just that also, we don't necessarily have so much of an associate's degree in nursing. It's all bachelor's, right? So they're all four-year degreed. Even a lot of the nurses in the U.S., you know, you can get U.S. licensure with a two-year degree. But that's not really that common here in the Philippines. In the Philippines, it's a four-year degree model. And again, it's all based off U.S. Training regimens.
Right. And you mentioned HEMAP and IBPAP briefly. Can you just explain to listeners what these associations are and kind of how they help the offshore staffing industries?
Yeah, no, for sure. So, like I said, we have, there's a larger umbrella association, which is IBPAP, and that's the international, it's IT Business Processing
Association
of the Philippines. I'm drawing a blank on the A for a second there, sorry. And it kind of oversees, you know, the whole BPO sector. And then under it are these different subsectors. So there's HIMAP, which is Healthcare Information Management. There's PSIA, which is software development. There's the Animation Council, which is, you know, again, there's a huge amount of talented, skilled artists and stuff here that kind of do a lot of drawing for a lot of animated stuff you see, and video effects in movies, that type of stuff. We also have the GICC, which is the Global In-House Center, or what used to be referred to maybe as captives. And these are the people that they didn't go the BPO route, or maybe they changed from the BPO route to, hey, we just put our own entity in the Philippines. So you'll have some very large companies that have their own operations here in the Philippines that maybe start as BPO. And it's doing the same model, the only difference being instead of there being a third-party company that's managing the people, it's one of theirs, it's a part of their actual company. And we could talk to that in a little bit because I'll explain to you more about that because how I'm involved in that and what we have to do with that.
So all of these associations then, they basically are shepherds for the industry and they are fighting for the industry. They're lobbying the government on behalf of the industry. They're setting standards for industry participants. So any clients, any customers that come to the Philippines know that they have these associations working on their behalf effectively, not directly, but effectively their behalf to, you know, instill standards, regulation within the industry, and they also, you know, they also have the support of the government. So people that come to the Philippines have all of this kind of built-in infrastructure and support, don't they?
Yes, 100%. That's and that's our main function, you know, as a HIMAP. If you say, you know, what's our mission? What's our charter? And our mission is to promote, market, and represent the Philippines healthcare information management services in the global market. And again, support our membership in doing so. So we're just an association. So I could talk to the numbers about what the healthcare arena, how much it's grown in the time frame that, you know, that I've been here. And when we do that, it's again from an industry perspective. So I'm not saying I've been responsible for this. I've been a member of an association. To your point, it's kind of helped shepherd that. It's worked with government. When I first came here, you know, there was laws in the book that women weren't allowed to work in the evenings, right? You had to get special exemptions. This was back in 2002, 2003 timeframe, because it was just the nature of the beast. But because of the way outsourcing works, the time differences, most of the work happens at night, obviously, if you're going to be catering to a U.S. audience. So, and these are the type of things where BPAP and HIMAP have worked together and stepped up and lobbied government and said, here's why it needs to change. And obviously, government's been very supportive of the entire industry and certainly helped us all along to help make it happen. But in regards to the growth aspect, I joined HIMAP in 2010, I believe it was. That's, again, right when they were changing their charter from MTAPI to HIMAP. And because of what I was doing with Medi-Call, I kind of got on their radar and they asked me to present at one of their meetings. I did so, really loved the aspect of what the organization was doing, thought I could be of some help to it, and applied and got on the board. And then in 2012, I got elected to be the chairman, and I held that position until just 2020. I just this year, I still am a board member, but I've stepped back off the Exacom, and it's, you know, kind of time for new blood, new ideas to kind of get in there. I'm wise enough to say that, you know, maybe I'm getting a little long in the tooth, let some of the more aggressive younger folks kind of bring in the fresh ideas. So, but the association itself, when I joined in 2010, was doing somewhere close to around maybe $300 to $400 million as an industry in whole revenue. So, I mean, so all the HIMAP members that were, again, primarily medical transcription companies, which is a lot lower revenue model, about, let's say, $400 million in revenue to the country. We just finished 2019 numbers. We're just shy of $3 billion in revenue. Again, there were some 14,000 employees back in 2010. We're now about 135,000 employees, direct employed, again, in just in the healthcare sector. And if you look at the overall BPO market, I think it's around $25 million. And you'll see that $3 billion, or $25 billion, yeah, I'm sorry, and $3 billion of that is healthcare. So we're well above 10% of contributor to the entire outsourcing sector.
Just to round off the circle then, what happened to your Medi-Call venture?
Well, like anything, when you build a company, you're always kind of got in your mind your hopes and dreams of what's your exit plan, right? What are you going to do with it? Are you going to, is it going to take it and grow it forever? Or are you going to sell it? You know, are you going to merge with somebody else? And as we grew up, while we blazed a path, you know, again, we were a small company. I mean, when we started in 2003 with employees, by 2012, we were about a little over 1,000 employees. And again, almost all nurses, and certainly at least all healthcare professionals. And it kind of became apparent to us that now we're on the radar of much larger companies. Right. And now, hey, this claim adjudication is something you can do. And, you know, some of the larger BPOs are wanting to get into the space. And now there's more competition for the talent that we need, as well as for the just the actual contracts themselves. And we were just well aware enough of the fact that maybe we were going to end up being we blazed the path and then get trampled by all the people behind you that start going down that path. Right. So we said, well, maybe it's time to think about an exit. And then we put ourselves out on the market, and we had quite a bit of quite a bit of attraction, and we did end up picking a larger company. Cognizant, by the way, it's all public knowledge. They're the ones that acquired Medi-Call. It still exists today as GCS, their Global Clinical Services Division, and still doing the same things we were doing then, only just obviously now on a bigger scale and a bigger company. Now they're part of a, I don't know, $15 billion entity or whatever the size of Cognizant is nowadays. So that worked out very, very well, obviously. And then that's still flourishing really well. I took that time and took a little bit of time off. And then I think anybody who's kind of entrepreneurial or loves being in the business, you say I'm going to retire and just go relax on a beach, but after a little bit of that, you start kind of going sure crazy on what can I do, what's next, what's happening, and kind of applied logic from what was our lessons learned from what we did in our Medi-Call days, what worked, what didn't, and if I'm going to come back into the industry, how do I want to do it?
And you didn't feel like going home, Jeff? You were committed to the Philippines?
I think that's a good question. Actually, I would say probably around 2000, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10, somewhere in that time frame, I just kind of said, you know what, Philippines became my home. I have a very nice, comfortable lifestyle here. I love the people. And again, there's just so much opportunity. Again, if you're kind of an entrepreneurial type, it's just kind of addictive to say, I want to be in this space. I've got access to such great talent, such capabilities, and I can just do something with this here. And again, to kind of, again, very active with the associations like HIMAP, if I can help contribute and kind of help see something grow, it's rewarding in its own right to kind of do that. Obviously, you want to make money, but I think you get a bigger rush or a bigger feel out of seeing the people that you brought in as frontline nurses that maybe they were doing some, they had a healthcare degree, but they weren't be able to apply that because there just wasn't enough positions available for them in that chosen field. So to be able to take them and apply them and see them grow from starting out as a phone agent to now they're being EVP level, in some of the larger BPOs and see that, and the work was all theirs that they had done, but just to be saying I helped provide the environment for that to happen is rewarding in its own right. So.
And Jeff, do you mind providing a little bit of context in terms of nurses, nursing salaries? I don't want to be too sort of voyeuristic, I suppose, but can you paint a picture of the opportunities for nurses in the Philippines, maybe in 2010, what they would earn locally, what they would earn then within the BPO industry and the potential earnings they could have within a BPO career?
Yeah, well, without talking direct numbers themselves, but I mean, the issue, like I said, the fact that there was so many, eyes were set, the Philippines has a strong OFW, aspect, meaning that it's the overseas Filipino worker, right? You've got a lot of Filipinos that go to other countries and provide services, and nursing really fell into that bucket, right? And there was this kind of a ticket to the U.S., right? Become a USRN, the U.S. always needed nurses as it went on, so there was a kind of self-perpetuating train for a long time. And because of that, you had a lot of people, kids or parents are putting their children through nursing school to say, let's be a nurse because there's a great opportunity for that career in that. What that meant was there's a lot of nurses in country. So when you come to the local hospital situation, again, if I wanted to be a USRN, it's mandatory I have to have local healthcare hospital experience before I can, finish on and take my NCLEX and become a USRN. Well, this meant that hospitals now to the point are saying, we got so many people wanting to be nurses that there was even to the extent of some cases, people paid a hospital to say, let me come work in your hospital for 6 months so I can get my experience. So, now that's drastic, but that really truly did happen. So it got to the point of saying, it's not how much more do I make working in a BPO? It's like, I got to spend money to work in a hospital, to kind of get what I need to kind of get my experience, right? So what that meant was then the overall salaries in hospitals for nurses obviously just wasn't real high. It's a supply and demand kind of aspect, right? So what they could make working in local hospitals as nurses versus they could double that working in the BPO environment, right? And that right. crudely enough, that's really where it falls into without getting into specifics exactly how many pesos they make in a hospital and how many they don't. Now, the interesting thing is now as time has gone on, that supply and demand is shifting a little bit. So now you're finding better opportunities for them to be nurses in hospitals here. But still doesn't compete necessarily with the BPO market just simply because of what the costs are in the U.S. So you can afford to pay a little better for them to work in a BPO environment than in a hospital. So it's still more attractive, but not as lucrative as crazy as it was before.
Yeah, and again, just valuable to illustrate, I think that the BPO offers people in the Philippines incredible opportunities, and it's not just a job, it's not just call center, but in the Philippines, it's a career, it's a ladder, and as you've mentioned, like people have built incredible careers within this industry, and it's far from the sort of the kind of sweatshops of ethical concern that people think that they might be.
100% spot on with that. I mean, like I said, I still talk to, over the thousands of employees. We had 1,000 employees, but at least there's a whole much more that kind of went in and went out. So the thousands of people I've known just through medical alone, I still talk with many of them today. In fact, I'm still working with quite a few of them in my new entity. So, and again, at completely different levels because of, just as I've grown, they've grown, and now, we're bringing different levels of expertise to the field and what we offer for our client base.
And so, what is that new challenge you've taken on, Jeff? What are you keeping yourself busy with now?
So like I said, so it was a look back internally and say, so what was lessons learned from Medi-Call? I mean, do we all just do it all over again? And the initial response was no, because we kind of let the cat out of the bag and the opportunities in healthcare. And part of my mind said, well, there's a lot of people doing that now. Do I want to jump back into that again? And again, a lot more people, a lot more money. So, how disadvantaged am I going to be going up against a guy who's a company who's got a bigger, expense lunch budget for its sales force than I have to operate under, right? So, where did we find opportunities, or where did we see opportunities to come back in? One of the areas where I saw was training, talent development. We really spent a lot of time and effort in training and developing our staff. I don't think you can. I really don't like the word overqualified. I don't think that's entirely true. Maybe a little overeducated, but again, then the task comes upon you to find them more challenging work. So, and that's and again, create new opportunities. So we, a company now is called Genfinity. We are a training slash consulting, and we also do BPO work. So we're kind of a little bit of all of it. So, again, kind of getting in the industry saying we want to do a lot of talent development. So we do a lot of maybe utilization management training. We help nurses get from help them get their USRN licensure. We've got training programs to kind of do that aspect for them, and just help them to all the aspects of what they need to really help thrive in the healthcare BPO market. We do trainings, and we contract a lot of times with the employers to bring that specialty training in, or with people directly. We also now the Philippines has just started that you need to get credits to renew your nurse licensure, so we're also a TESDA validated and approved, company to provide those credits as well too, so they can earn their credits towards keeping their nurse licensure. So that was one piece that we came back into. The other was, and this is back from the lessons learned, when we ran Medi-Call, our three largest clients, and again, I'm sorry, but I'm just not comfortable naming names. I just always just how that goes, but all significant healthcare players. And we were doing very good work for them, doing utilization management or claim case management support, high level services. As our contracts were coming to term, they weren't renewing, and we were kind of baffled because, from a BPO's perspective, we were hitting all of our SLAs or our service level agreements, right? I mean, our calls are being answered on time, the cases were being on time, the quality was in within an approved metrics and all that. So we're like, going, well, gee, why are you leaving us? And the answer simply was, is, well, you've proved it. You proved the Philippines is a great place to be. So we really want to really grow this up. So we're going to set up our own operation. And instead of doing it through a BPO environment, we're going to set up our own, again, for lack of a better word, captive, or global in-house center. And now today, I mean, I know for a fact one of these clients who was maybe about 200 or 300 seats with us at Medi-Call is now 17,000 seats strong here in their with their captive entity in the Philippines. So, I mean, again, we just kind of proved what it was, and then they kind of took it up and stepped up with it and kind of grew it up. And the same thing with the other two large players. So the thought process was, and we spoke with one of the companies that had sent a U.S. resource. They relocated them here. Similar story to myself, I guess, right? They said, hey, you go live in the Philippines, help set up our own captive operation. This woman, I think, has lived here for about a year and a half trying to do that set up. And one thing about if you do your job right, you make it look a lot easier than it really is, right? So when she starts to start up, it was, how do you incorporate the company? How do you put the engines in place to hire the right talent? How do you make sure you're putting all the proper protocols and processes in place and all these kind of things? She kind of had to help build up here, again, in a different culture than the US. I mean, they're very, very same, but they are different as well. You know that living here. And there's just certain ways things are addressed. Certainly labor laws are different in how you deal with things. So what maybe you can do in the US, you can't do here. So she had to kind of learn all that and build it all up. And it took her over a year and a half. And she said, man, it was just a lot more work than she thought. So taking that information, Genfinity said, why don't we be the enabler for you in that? I've got the experience. I've done it long ago and when it was a much harder market than it is today, before everything was as a service that you're kind of getting now today. And we offer those services for you as to our clients. So if you say, hey, I'd love to incorporate in the Philippines, we can put you in our contact center and incubate you in a small seat. You know, say if you want to take 10, 15, 20 seats, kind of get your feet wet, prove the model out. We can do them and they can be employed under us or with some of our partnerships with the other companies that we work with. And we provide the operational oversight as you're setting it up. We do all the support services as a service, meaning we'll take care of all your payroll, HR support needs, your finance needs, offer local legal support. And all these are going to be offered on a monthly as a service basis versus having to hire an HR department, hire an IT department, and all those things. So that when you do incorporate your entity, you focus all your work on the operation itself with your people.
How's that going? What's the journey been?
It's been working out great. You know, we're a couple years old now. I think we're coming up on our 3-year anniversary. And it really, really kind of started taking off in earnest, you know, it was a little over on the 2-year mark. We have a major medical tourism hospital out of Thailand that actually, you know, and I should deviate for a second. Not everyone wants to do that. Set up my own captive route. Some people are happy with the standard BPO model. Say, no, I just want you to manage it. And some of them come in and they'll start out and say, well, yeah, that's a great idea. We'll think about incorporating our own entity. How about we pilot out 10 seats with you? And then, oh, hey, add 10 more seats. Hey, add 10 more seats. And then at some point they step up and say, you know what? We're happy with the BPO model. Just manage it as BPO. So we have a large medical tourism hospital out of Thailand that we have nurses here that answer their email requests, Facebooks, live chats, all those kind of things being done with Philippine nurses for people that are admitting to that medical tourism hospital. But then we've also got 4 other clients now that have come to us and did exactly the model I'm talking about. They come and says, okay, well, we'll hire, you know, 20 people under your umbrella, get them started. And while we're going through that, we'll file all the paperwork, get them, you know, incorporated with the SEC, set up an entity for them, usually their company name /Philippines, right? It's usually how it kind of works out. And then create their entity, create their local bank accounts. We support them. We'll even have someone who will sit as a local board member for them as well for that visibility. And then just oversee that operation. Again, provide that HR support, that finance support, the legal support, allowing them to work on just their operational play. And it's going great. We've one client in particular that started out initially with 20 people right before COVID hit. Even with all the pressures and everything that was kind of going on with the lockdowns, they were still seeing the benefit. Obviously, we migrated them from an in-office to an at-home model. Again, we did all the legwork for them. We kind of moved all the PCs around, did all the local IT configurations, getting everything all set up and working for them. Even through COVID, they started at 20 seats. They're now, right here at the end of 2020, they're now, I believe, 75 seats. And they just told us that they love the model, they're happy with it, and they're projecting to be over 200, you know, by mid next year. So obviously the model's working for them. They're kind of getting the benefit. And I think one of the other things to look at when you look at having your own operation in the country versus a third-party BPO is sometimes there may be regulatory changes or customer arguments to say, listen, we'll give you our contract, but you have to tell me you're not third-party offshore in that. Right? Because the fear is if you don't have a good control on it, is something going to get lost? Is data going to be, you know, suspect or an issue? Obviously, the BPO environment's done an excellent job of proving why that's not the case, but still some people have that concern. So if you go and set up, well, no, it's not a third party, it's my own entity. You know, it's us dash Philippines, it's Genfinity Philippines versus Genfinity US. So it's part of my family, it's just my Philippine operation. That could maybe help you get over some of those hurdles as well, too.
Incredible, isn't it? And you know, it's amazing. Even in times of COVID, there is just such growth, and the industry is seeing such strong signs of growth and potential and evolution the whole time. And you know, I think it's just really only just now coming of age. You know, there's a lot of commentators in the industry saying that the outsourcing has matured. It's a sunset industry, and basically it's all kind of over. But I really think that it's only just the beginning, and we're right on the cusp now of truly remote, truly globalized employment. And it's a fantastic.
Well, you know, there's another interesting set of specs if you can look at it. And I think iBPAP has shared some decks. I think you have. I've shared with you decks from, you know, presentations from HIMAP. And one very, very important thing to look at when you're looking at the numbers or the growth of the sector, or kind of answers to those questions of a sunset industry, I think it's sunset from a labor arbitrage industry play. You know, people that were shopping around and going, hey, here's these quick hits, man. Hey, I want 100 people or 1,000 people to make these phone calls and sell these magazines for me or whatever it may be. And I want them for pennies on the dollar. And that's how I make money, because I can have 10 times as many of them making phone calls, so I'll make more money. Yes, I think that is sunsetting. But what now is just kind of reemerging kind of out of this phoenix, out of this, is these high-valued services capabilities. Meaning, I don't want a cheapest person as I can get that can speak some English and sell me magazine subscriptions. I want to get someone who can, hey, I need some help with editing the magazine articles, right? Hmm. And hey, you've got a huge amount of people that kind of come out with degrees and whatever degrees you have within magazine editing, right? You know, that would pertain to that, and say, you know, that workforce exists here. And you know what? I really need truly skilled writers or editors or contributors versus someone that can be on the low end just kind of shilling it, trying to help me sell it from the front end aspect or taking the front end support phone call for it. So the industry, I think, has made a huge evolution in that, and how you can kind of see that demonstrated over the years. We've always kind of give the numbers and show how the Philippine healthcare has grown. And like I said, we go from 400 million in 2010 to 3 billion in 2020. But what an interesting thing that you've seen grow over that is you've seen the headcount grow from 14,000, you know, to 135,000, and the revenue go from 400 million to 3 billion. Every year, as you see that grow, the percentage of the income revenue always grows higher than the headcount, meaning that we're doing higher valued services, right? We're doing a lot more money, but we don't have the same, you know, play, you know, hand in hand conjunction with headcount. Where maybe we had 10 people doing this job, and now we got 10 times the revenue. We don't have 100 people. We got 10 times the revenue, but maybe there's only 70 people doing it. And that means those people are getting a higher bill rate per seat, meaning they're doing a higher valued service, right?
And it's the inevitable ladder, isn't it? I mean, you saw that with Chinese manufacturing. You know, initially they were making very basic products and not doing it well, and now they're making, you know, the most advanced products, the iPhones, and doing it better than any capacity and capability in the US or anywhere else in the world. So it is that ladder, isn't it? That skill ladder. And inevitably you then build the competencies of the staff that do it.
Yeah, no. I was actually funny. I was just talking with someone last night, and someone made a comment about a cheaper product, you know, and they said, oh yeah, made in China. And I said, well, what isn't? Right. I said, I think your differentiator comes now from, if it's you say made in China, it's iPhones are made in China, but maybe the ones you buy that don't work right, those are probably the ones that failed the QA and someone snuck them out the door. So, that's a different problem with it. Or the guy who's ripping off tech and kind of, you know, mirroring it. That's the thing you got to worry about. But to your point, exactly, the skills have really improved and the capabilities.
Well, what a journey, Jeff. Thank you so much for sharing that journey with us. And of course, best of luck for Genfinity. And if anyone wants to reach out to you or know any more about Genfinity, how can they do that?
Yeah, I'm easily accessible. I'm on LinkedIn. Name is Jeff Williams. And certainly you can email me directly at jeffwilliams@genfinity.net. And I think you can maybe make a link for that, so I won't spell it out. But it's pretty much how it sounds. I love the opportunity. I love the challenge. Before we end, I just want to tell you one other quick thing I'm seeing. What we do now and the support we provide, here's just one that's got me enamored, is now how we're seeing new tech is applying in the field. So we've got a client, they're using virtual reality to help pediatricians. So when kids are in the hospital or going in to see the doctor to get shots, they got a little VR headset that the child will put on. And that keeps them distracted. Not only distracted, it's actually interactive with the procedures that the doctor is doing. So like I say, I'm going to give you a shot, and it makes a little audible cue. So the kid's watching it and says, oh, look, there's little fishes. And they look at the fish, and then the fish swims down, and it looks like the fish is biting their arm. And the doctor gets a vision, you know, gets an audio cue, and that's when they give him a shot in the arm. And the kid's like, oh, the fish bit me. Versus before, it was mom, dad, and the nurse holding the child down when the doctor's traumatized and giving them a shot, right? But I mean, that is just so exciting to me to see that type of evolution of now how technology is kind of coming in, making these real world plays into the world. And to be a part of that is just what's so fun and exciting. So to your point, all companies are welcome. I don't care if it's only two people, you know, we'd love to help you start out, because I just love being in the space and seeing all the new exciting things that are happening.
That was Jeff Williams of Genfinity. If you want any of the show notes, as always, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to reach out to us, if you want to send us an email, just email us to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.